Well, we've been talking about the Sermon on the Mount on Sunday evenings for a while, and I'd ask you to read the 6th chapter of Matthew and take note of how many times the word Father was used there. And last Sunday night we spent a little time with that, and at the end, I'd ask the congregation here how many times the word Father was used in that chapter, and I believe the number is 12. And at the end, we kind of got off on another tangent, and Drew asked me, said, "So what's the importance of 12 and in there?" I don't think there's anything parallel with the word Father being in there 12 times, lining up with 12 tribes or 12 apostles or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying at all. I do feel like it's significant that the word Father was used 12 times to indicate the level of importance of fathers and indicate the importance of the Father's image in the mind of Christ. In my Bible, and I'm sure yours too, if it's a red letter edition New Testament, every word in the 6th chapter of Matthew is ascribed to being Jesus' words. And Jesus used the word or the term Father that many times in one chapter. I believe it's significant. So I'd like to just start out by saying it's impossible to overemphasize the importance of the Father's role in a home. I'm thinking too of substitutions that life causes us to have to bring into life. One of those that happened in my life is I'm thankful that I had a father in my home, but I didn't have a grandfather. My grandfather on my father's side was removed, you might say, from the family. I saw him twice in my life. He didn't pass away until I was a teenager, but I had no relationship with him whatsoever. And my grandfather on my mother's side passed away before I was born. So I had no opportunity to build a relationship with him. But I had my grandmother remarried when I was about 3 years old. And that man was the only grandfather I knew, but he was a good example of a grandfather. He made a big impact in my life, and today I look back at the efforts that he made to make me feel like I belonged and made me feel accepted, the time he took for us, the interest that he gave in us as my brother and I, as we were growing up, young boys. And he was the one that we took to show all of our adventures when he came to see us. He's the one that followed us around in the backyard and looked at our treehouse that we had built and the holes we had dug and all of those kind of things. He was the one that came to see that. So it was important. And, you know, our world today is really mixed up in a lot of things. And they want to try to portray that whether you're a man or a woman is not important or discretionary and all of those kind of things. But I'm here to tell us this evening that the certainty of knowing who you are and what your purpose and what your focus is in life is very valuable. So I believe that there's opportunity for father images and grandfather images to be substituted where there's voids. And those of us that have those opportunities to fill them, I want to challenge us to fill those. And those that need them filled, I want to challenge you to to avail yourself of opportunities to substitute something in there. So with that kind of being said, I'd like for us to go to Proverbs, the fourth chapter. If you were raised in my home, we started family worship several times from the book of Proverbs, especially if I had something on my mind that I wanted the boys to know about. We started over here, and this fourth chapter of Proverbs is a good place to start. It says, "Hear ye children the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine, forsake you not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said unto me, let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live." So as a general rule and across the board, I'll tell you that a father many times can be the more abrupt one in the home. And the mother many times feels like that there needs to be some explanation and there needs to be a lot more cushion with any kind of correction. And I remember one time when my father, we were riding along and we got into we were talking about something. It wasn't about whether I was behaving or not, but we were talking about something and I had something in my mind and I thought my father was wrong. And we went along for a while and kind of going back and forth, and directly he said, "You can believe whatever you want to, but you're wrong." And he just left it like that. We were done with that discussion, and I found out a little later that my dad was right. And there is something about a father being saying, "Okay, it's gone on far enough. This is it." Sometimes it's when the father comes home and he sees something going on. As soon as he comes in the door, he may see the child being disrespectful to his their mother. It could be a young boy and it could be a young girl. But they come in the door and they see them not cooperating and not behaving like they said it should. And he may have had a long day and he might just be very abrupt to say, "Listen, go tell your mama you're sorry. You just go over there and do what she says. And if you don't like it, then you're going to deal with me." And the mother might say, "Oh, don't do that. It's already done." Many times that's the way a father addresses things. But I want to tell you, as time goes on and the father spends the time, I'm talking particularly to you young men here that have your family, your children ahead of you. Think about this. It's important for you to be a father. Jesus thought it was important. Otherwise, he wouldn't have said father 12 times in the 6th chapter of Matthew. We can go through and read each one and maybe dissect every one of those phrases where he said father, but I'm going to tell you, it's important. It's important for you to be the stabilizing, anchoring point in your family and in your home. So these verses says, "Hear ye children the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding." So if it's important for the child to listen, to hear the instruction of a father, I would say it's important for the father to have some instruction to give. It's important for the father. You don't have to have a PhD, and you don't have to have a master's or a bachelor's or anything like that, but I'm going to tell you, your children have a desire and an appetite to know what daddy knows. And take the time to share it with them. If your child is a teenager and he really don't know what daddy does for a living, there's something missing. FYI. If you fix wires or you fix pipes or you deal with unruly convicts or whatever your job is, they need to know. You need to take time to explain to them what your life consists of. He says, "Hear ye children the instruction of a father." Many times the father tries to disconnect what they do with their work environment from their children. They don't want their children to be impacted. Well, I'm going to tell you, if you don't impact them with what you're doing, there's going to be a vacancy there. There's going to be a void there. They feel like they belong when they know that their daddy is a farmer or their daddy is a whatever. That when they know that, there is a real stability. They feel like they belong. There's a real sense of cohesion and unity and environment there. That's why the writer says, "Hear then, ye children, the instruction of a father. For I give you good doctrine, forsake you not my law." So doctrine is something more than we just get out of the Bible. Doctrine is how a father approaches life. A father can be the type that any kind of little ripple on the horizon, they can go into a panic and be ready to do something drastic. Or they can be a calm person, and when something disastrous happens, they can be looking for a solution at hand. I think sometimes I've read these stories about cars that run away. You know, used to read a story in Reader's Digest. Seemed like somebody's car started accelerating, going down the highway, and it lasted for 30 or 40 minutes, them weaving in and out of cars and the brakes getting hot and all of those kind of things. And I used to read those and think, there was a lot better solution than all of that. Why would you risk yourself and everybody else for 30 minutes on the road? All you had to do was put the thing in neutral and ease it over to the side. I mean, there was a better solution. But many times... I'm trying to get to something here. All right. Many times we us as a father, you've got a responsibility to teach your children good doctrine. How do I face the sudden things that come up in life? Car runs away. You ever had one of those situations? Step on the accelerator and when you let up, it just keeps going. I've had some of those. It's like, what do you do? Something starts to slip and fall. What, do you catch it or you get out of the way? That's doctrine, you see. You follow what I'm saying here? Helping your children know this, you know, if that thing is bigger than me and it's falling, just, you got to get out of the way. You got to just prepare for the inevitable. It's going to fall. You got to use something to deflect it, whatever it is. So he says, "His father will give you good doctrine, forsake you not my law." You've heard me say, most of you have heard me say, there was a time that one of the boys, when they were really young, they liked to be with me, and I wanted them to be with me and all of that. And so we had this little thing, and he'd want to come out and be with me, but he was always distracted and looking out across the field and somewhere else. And I'd tell him, "If you watch me, you might learn something." So I said that a whole lot to him. I said it to him so much that when somebody else was there, he told them that. It was another adult, and he was about 5 or 6. And I'd give him a little job to do, and this person became distracted and wasn't watching him while he was doing his little job. So he turned to him and he said, "If you watch me, you might learn something." And he was 5, and the other guy was about 40, you know. He was a friend of ours. But so what I'm telling you here is that if you will teach them, watch me, you might learn something. Get in here with me. If the sink is leaking, let them try to get under the sink with you. Yes, it's unhandy, but include them in that. Mamas might come along and say, what's he doing up there on that ladder? But anyway, you got to use a little wisdom here, but include them in what you're doing. The more you include them, the more they'll want to be included. The more they'll feel part of it. And, you know, I went to public school, and I remember those arguments. You know, one of the boys, they run out of ways to threaten one of their school friends or whatever. They'd say, my daddy can beat up your daddy. Well, I never saw my dad in a fight, but I was real confident that my dad was stronger than any of them. Just because I'd watched him work and apply himself, I thought he was the strongest man in the world. Well, when they're with you, they get that feel. They see you putting your efforts into things. And there is something so valuable for children coming along, seeing the father put their heart in to whatever it is. It might be keeping the grass mowed. It might be fixing something around the place. It might be keeping the family structure together. When they see their father putting their effort into that, it makes a big impression. Why did Jesus say 12 times in one chapter, Father? It's because Father is an important icon in our lives. He says here that his father taught him. He says, let thine heart, fourth verse, retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. You'll be alive. You'll be wholesome. It'll be something that'll pay dividends. Don't try to be an absentee father. Let's go to the third chapter of Proverbs, back up a little bit. Verses 11 in chapter 3 says, my son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. Now, I wouldn't volunteer for chastening, and you probably wouldn't either. I wouldn't when I was 4, and I wouldn't when I was 40, and now that I'm in my 50s, I still wouldn't volunteer for it. But he says, despise not the chastening of the Lord. In verse 12, he says, for whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he delighteth. You know, if you love your children, you'll chasten them. If you love them, you'll correct them. If you'll give them instruction. You'll give them good doctrine of how to handle life. You'll give them good, sound doctrine spiritually and scripturally to the best of your abilities. But when they need corrected, you may have to discipline them physically. You might have to say, I'm sorry, you're wrong. That's not going to fly. That's not going to work here. As long as you live in my house, I think all of my boys have heard that phrase. As long as you live in my house, this is not the way we're going to do it. Well, it makes an impact. What does it do? It gives them direction. It gives them stability. You know, don't be afraid as a father to say, uh-uh. That's not the way we do it here. This, you know, there may be, somebody might say, well, my friend, maybe someone they go to church with, they do it. It's okay. You got a reason for it. It don't even have to be a reason that stands up against someone else's explanations. You got a reason. It's the way your house needs to run. You wouldn't say no unless you had a good reason. Make that the way you operate. If you're going to say no, don't just say no to be contrary. Have a reason for it. If somebody asks you, you can tell them, well, I think that's a waste of time. I think it's a waste of money. I think it's a waste of good brain power. No, you're not going to play those kind of games. No, you're not going to do those kind of activities. No, you're not going to own a motorcycle and live in this house at the same time. Whatever it is, you can say those things and have a reason. It don't have to be, somebody else may have a perfect reason to do the opposite. You see what I'm saying? We're trying to give stability. Dad's got a reason. That's what we're going to live by. Don't be afraid to administer discipline. You know, we used to have a minister amongst us that would say a phrase, steady as you go. Remember that? Some of you do. Steady as you go. Not volatile, not flying off the handle. Used to work with a man that come to the end of the day and sometimes he'd say, I'm just wore out. I've been jumping to conclusions and flying off the handle and running down my coworkers all day. Well, that's not the type of man you need to be. You need to be steady as you go. Stability. Consistency. So, let's go to Ephesians, the 6th chapter. And Colossians says pretty much the same thing in the 3rd chapter, but in Ephesians, the 6th chapter, we'll read it there. And the 4th verse, he says, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Had a neighbor lived across the road from us when Anita and I were newly married. We'd been married 2 or 3 years, I guess, and he and his wife had 2 boys that were slightly older than our oldest two, and we moved from that neighborhood, moved in another house, and our children grew up, and maybe we had already moved to over here to Webb City, and I can't remember where it was. Anyway, we were totally in separate communities, and so I met the fella up again, and we got to visiting a little bit. And so I asked him, I said, how are your boys? How are they doing? And he said, mean as snakes. And that's the way I like them. And I thought, boy, that's, I got higher aspirations for my children than that. I don't want to think of my children as mean as snakes, and I sure don't want other people to think of them that way. And he says here, fathers, provoke not your children. How do you make a child mean as a snake? I would say they were hard to get along with. I would say they were difficult. I would say that other people thought they were kind of dangerous. How do you make them that way? You know, you poke something long, and I got a pretty nice little puppy. This is a little side thought at my house right now. And it's pretty even-tempered. It wants to mind. When it got there, it wanted to come in the house all the time. And, you know, I'm not a house dog person. So we've coached it that, you know, outside's where dogs stay and people go in the house. And so it comes to the door and it'll sit there and look at us and whine a little bit. But it'll stay on the outside. Now, that's a pretty, like I said, a pretty even-tempered little dog. But I'm telling you, I could get me a sharp stick. And every time I come in, I could poke that dog with that, whack it with the stick and poke it and all of that. And I could make a mean dog out of that. You know, you can, as a father, you can poke your children and you can whack them with something verbally, physically, and you can make them mean as snakes if you want to. But he says, don't do that. You fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Admonition is not poking them with a stick. Admonition is saying, that's wrong. That's not going to be acceptable. This is not, you're going to have to adjust your behavior, and it might be a behavior of frowning and being unhappy. And you might have to say, if you don't smile, I'm going to spank you. Now that sounds like a paradox, doesn't it? You're going to have to put a smile. I've said it many times. You got your smile on upside down. You need to turn that thing over. That's admonition. That's not provoking. But we have, as a father, it says, provoke not your children, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Do you think Jesus felt that? Do you think he felt the nurture from his heavenly Father? Didn't he have that confidence? What did he tell us about how much God heard what he said? He said he heareth him always, doesn't he? Does our children have our ear? Do we listen to them? Do they have, is there a real connection there, or do they feel tuned out most of the time? He says, bring them up in the nurture and admonition. Even when my dad told me, you can believe what you want to, but you're wrong, I knew my dad still loved me. I never felt threatened. And as I went on, I realized that he told me that because he did love me. He did want me to know the right answer. He did want me to have the correct understanding, and he told me I was wrong. That's something about being a father. So I'd like to go now to 1 John, the second chapter. And we'll notice a few verses here. In verse 13 beginning, he says, I write unto you, fathers, because ye have known him that is from the beginning. Fathers, you have a responsibility to know the Lord. You have a responsibility to have a relationship with God to the extent that your children don't question whether you have a relationship with the Lord. He says, I write unto you, fathers, because you have known him that is from the beginning. I write unto you, young men, because you've overcome the wicked one. Have you overcome the wicked one? If you haven't, you sure need to be a father. I write unto you, little children, because you have known the Father. I've written unto you, fathers, because you have known him that is from the beginning. I've written unto you, young men, because you're strong. I'm not as strong as I used to be. But you younger men are in the height of your strength. He's writing unto, there's an appeal. There's an appeal for fathers. Right in the middle of our world that questions the validity of manhood, that tries to tell us that manhood is a fluke. It really wasn't supposed to be that way. It's a mutation. They want to tell us that. And that life on earth is evolving to where there won't be any males. You don't have to do much study and you'll find out that that's out there. I want to tell you that the need for a father is greater today than it's ever been. He says, I've written unto you, young men, because you're strong, and the word of God abideth in you, and ye have overcome the wicked one. Get the victory. Get the victory. All of those things that thus so easily beset you, get the victory and be strong. And he says in verse 15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. I want you to listen to where this ends up. Because the world comes along and puts out this call of fulfillment, excitement, euphoria, and all of that. Whether you're eligible to be a father or not. The world puts this out. So many things that looks so enticing. It's so gratifying and all that. He says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away in the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. So I was thinking about this verse. I want you to know that if you live long enough, all of those things that the world promotes as gratifying, whether it's sensually or whatever it is, all of those things will come to the place that it don't matter anymore. He says, and the world passeth away in the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. You know what the devil wants to tell you? If you don't gratify yourself, you won't ever experience fullness and richness. But you know, the world wants us to believe that that's all that matters. And the reality is, it won't just pass away at the judgment day. That's kind of what my perspective always used to be as a younger man. But I'll tell you what happens. It literally passes away. There's going to come a time that there are things that's not appealing. And he says, for all of this world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but of the world. And the world passeth away. And what are you left with? If you're left with emptiness because you weren't gratified, or you attempted to be gratified, you're just going to be a shell. But he says real plainly, he that doeth what? The will of God abideth forever. So this is my little challenge this evening. I want you to be steady as you go. I want you young men that have homes, that are in a position to have a home, I want you to be steady as you go. I want you to put the Lord first. I want you to embrace the role of a father. I want you to be someone that others look on and say, now that's what a young man ought to be. That's the steadiness. That's the steadfastness that a young man ought to have. I want you to be someone that your children look up to and say, that's my daddy. And if they get in caught up in some kind of debate about, well, my daddy can beat up your daddy, I want them to know my daddy is strong. My daddy is capable. He's able. I've watched him. I've been right there and saw it happen. I'm not advocating a contest by any means. I'm just saying that these are things that we must, by our behavior, you know how equipped a young child is when they feel that their daddy can fix anything? Maybe you can't fix everything, but your children grow up wanting to think that. You may be the worst fixer there ever was, but your child is going to grow up thinking that you... It's just like learning how to eat ice cream. I mean, how tough is it to teach a child to eat ice cream? A child comes along and it's just a natural thing. They think daddy can fix it. They've brought troubles to daddy ever since they were big enough to know who daddy was. And daddy's been able to put their shoe back on. He's been able to button their shirts. He's been able to do all of those things. And now they think that daddy can fix whatever it is that don't work. Instill that in them. Don't tell them, go talk to the neighbor. Don't tell them, I can't do nothing for you. You cultivate the strengths that'll build their confidence, all of you. And I believe the Lord will give you the reward. He says, whoever doeth the will of God does what? Abideth forever. This is a secret that the world is missing. They want to challenge manhood. They want to challenge a father's role. They want to turn the father into something besides a provider. A provider of emotional stability, of financial stability, of spiritual stability. Take these things and apply these principles. This is the doctrine I'm talking about. Apply the principles of stability and strength to the spiritual walk, the emotional walk, the financial things. Apply it to all of it. It's the key. You don't want to be the one that only provides financially. You want to be the one that provides spiritual stability. Take the role of leading family worship. If you want to read Proverbs 3 and Proverbs 4, read it over and over again. Take the initiative. God will bless that effort. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a preacher, you don't have to be a Sunday school teacher, but take the role. When the family unloads on you, you've got to be able to absorb the emotional discharge. All right? Lord help you. Why did John say, I write unto you young men because what? You're strong. I believe in you. You can do it with God's help. But you got some big shoes to fill. And it's one of the backbones of our nation that's crippled right now. And we need to do our part. You can't fix it all, but you need to do your part. You pray for me.